Hey, everybody. Welcome to the very first Friday Filibuster of 2013. I am David Johnson, joined by Mac McIntyre.
I can do.
Eric Asher-Slager.
Hello.
Daryl Loomis.
Hey.
And I am getting past the cold, and hopefully I've dodged the epic zombie possibility-making flu virus that's sweeping the nation. So hopefully this is just a cold, but my I'm really banking on my voice holding out. So we'll get right to it then. Mac McIntyre, we've had a little 1 week sabbatical, so anything to report?
Let's see. Well, I went and saw Les Mis.
Okay.
Which is short for Les Miserables.
Thank you. What does that stand for in French?
The sad people.
Sure. All right.
it was interesting. I really liked the movie. I liked it a lot. But that being said, it's not a movie for everyone. So it's kind of, you know, good and bad. But I really did like it. It's just, you know, 3 hours of nonstop singing is a lot to take, and you really have to mentally prepare yourself for it.
Well, it's a Slayer concert or something.
Well, that's true, too, yeah.
Slayer in Les Miserables.
That's right, that'd be awesome. But yeah, I mean, I think they made the smart choice, though, because when you've got a property like this, you can either, you know, just go out and just, you know, do Les Mis the way Les Mis should be done, or you take the safe route and you do the watered-down, feel-good Hollywood version of Les Mis. And instead, they took the high road and they, you know, they did the show the way the show should be done. So I think just for nothing else, they should be applauded for that.
Mm-hmm. Is it stagey at all, or is it a more like a full, like, does it feel like a full world?
I'd say for the most part, it feels like a full world. I remember thinking that when they build the big barricade and stuff, I remember thinking that could have been even bigger. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's a very minor complaint, though. The director really likes to put the camera in close to everyone's faces on the songs because they're really hoping to sell the emotion.
Well, they're performing them live, too.
That's know? Right. So, yeah, they're so not lip-syncing.
No, the CGI was... They CGI'd out the microphones, so they're legit. Yeah, the
microphones. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Music, yeah. Everything. So it's very much like having seen it as well, and being the cultured dynamo that I am, having seen it on Broadway actually. Wow. Eric, you might remember that.
You might remember. I don't remember that at all. Was that part of the?
You might remember hearing about that.
Rather. The infamous trip.
Yeah. Yes. That's on. We myself and some school newspaper editors took a trip on the college's dime, and we squeezed in a Les Miserables viewing.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm just trying to wait. What's the statute of limitations? Is 1, 2? Okay, you're fine. Go ahead.
All right, good. So, having seen the Broadway musical, it did feel like, I mean, certainly to a grander scale, but yeah, it was pretty much like the musical and all the trappings of that, which is probably why I'm still kind of partial to Liam Neeson's and Jeffrey Rush's. At the 1998 film or whatever, you know, Claire Danes was in it, no singing. Do you guys see that one?
I recall it not being all that great.
Oh, really? So, I enjoyed it. Enjoyed it a good deal. So, I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
There's like the 4-hour French version, too. That one was really good. But, again, that's a lot to sit through.
Yikes. Oh, man. Wait, so are we starting off with 2013 with Max saying he didn't like a Liam Neeson version Les Miserables, and you prefer the 4-hour French version? Is that where
times have changed?
Times have changed, my friend. Yeah.
Liam Neeson didn't cut any terrorist throats in his version.
He didn't. So yeah, but overall, you liked it though, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, it was great. It was pretty good. Now, what do you think of Anne Hathaway's Oscar buzz? I mean, to me, she would get it for one song, essentially one sequence.
Right, yeah, it's another one of those close-ups I've mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
They hold on her for a really long time.
It's essentially a colonoscopy, really.
Yeah.
I mean, right up there.
Yeah, and again, that, you know, that's by design because they're really, you know, selling just the music and the emotion, and that's fine. So I thought she was good, and yeah, so sure, why not nominate her for an Oscar?
All right, very good. Anything else?
I think that should just about do it.
All right. Daryl.
Let's see. Not a ton. A couple of weeks ago for the site, I reviewed the first season of Enlightened, HBO kind of dramedy with Laura Dern and Diane Ladd and Owen Wilson. Or, I'm sorry, Luke Wilson. Luke Wilson. About Laura Dern plays a woman who had an affair with her boss. She's some high-level corporate VP, has an affair with the CEO or whoever, and it ends badly. She freaks out and goes to Hawaii for a rehabilitation trip and comes back a, quote, changed woman with the idea to fix her life and then also everybody's life around her. And that's the basic premise. It's 10 half-hour episodes. The new season's starting here pretty soon, I believe. And it gets kind of to the heart of what I think about HBO doing comedies. Curb Your Enthusiasm is one thing. But Hung is another movie that, or another show that really suffers the same problem, that it never really knows what it wants. It wants to have this dramatic thrust. It wants to have this weight to it. And in so doing, kills the comedy. So there's some funny performances in this Enlightened show, and Laura Dern's performance is fantastic as a performance goes. But in 10 episodes, in 300 minutes, I didn't laugh a single time. And I can see where they're going for it, but there's so much more of the time that's being – of time being spent dealing with problems and having feelings – that it makes it really hard to laugh at these people. And so while the second season, you know, there's some potential there, and hopefully it finds its footing. It is a really well-acted and well-produced show. But as a comedy, it fails just miserably.
That's a shame.
It's a shame. And it's got Laura, you know, Laura Dern's in it, like I said, and then Diane Ladd plays her mom, and they're real-life mother and daughter. So there's that dynamic, and that worked really well in Wild at Heart. You know, but that was back in 1990, so – or whatever, 91. And so, you know, but it still works really well. They have a really strong and kind of funny mother-daughter relationship. But overall, you know, a good cast and good writing doesn't – can't make up for its lack of any genuine direction.
Have you ever taken – Girls for a spin? Ever watch Girls?
I have not.
Yeah. I mean, it's just such. It seems like it's ballyhooed so much. I'm wanting.
Yeah, you know. I haven't seen it. I've heard about it, but it's just, you know, it's something I haven't. Yeah, I just haven't picked up. But I'm slow on the uptake with TV. And speaking of that,
yeah,
being slow on the uptake. I also started recently watching finally the reboot of the Doctor Who shows.
Are you starting from? Square One?
Starting from Square, from the Christopher Eccleston ones, not the originals. I can't watch those anymore. I was a fan when I was a kid. Turned it off a long, long time ago. The show came back. I wasn't really that interested in it particularly. But enough writers who I like have gone in and done shows that it made me want to, you know, sit down and actually check it out. And I like it. It's got some of the old style BBC cheesiness to it. It's all in good fun. I'm halfway through the second season now, and I can say, and it might change over the next five seasons or however long he's around, I definitely like Christopher Eccleston better than I like David Tennant.
All right.
So there's that.
All right. Very good. Speaking of old news, Eric, what do you got?
Well, okay. I got, well, some old news and some
news?
New. Well, right. Not breaking. It happened a couple weeks ago, but we weren't around last week, so I went to the theater.
Oh, the theater.
Not like you. I don't go to Broadway. highfalutin Broadway theater that the Johnsons frequent. I went to the movie, the Nickelodeon.
The old Grindhouse.
Exactly. And I saw The Hobbit.
Yes.
David Johnson's favorite movie of last year.
It really was, yes. And?
Yeah. I liked it. It was I did not love it as much as you did, but you know, you had set the bar pretty high. So
yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah, guilty as charged, but
yeah, that was fine. It was I'd had a good time watching it. I definitely felt a few scenes where, you know, it felt like it was running a little bit longer than it needed to, but generally I liked going back to Middle Earth. I enjoyed the dwarf stuff just from the perspective of you know, kind of fleshing out their backstory and giving their whole kind of culture it's time in the sun. And I liked the early on that whole kind of flashback to tell the story of, you know, setting up Smaug and all that stuff and kind of getting a glimpse of kind of the you know, dwarf culture at its high point. I thought it was pretty fun. And, you know, the Gollum, it was good to see Gollum again. It was good to see all that stuff. I have to say that probably the one thing that I had a problem with in the movie, and it's not a storytelling thing, but the CGI I found to be very distracting, which is weird because it's, you know, there's obviously Lord of the Rings movies made a while ago now, and this is a newer movie, so you kind of expect the effects to be as good, if not better. But I sort of miss the practical stuff that Jackson did in Lord of the Rings. There's a lot more like entirely CGI characters, and I never find those to be as convincing. You know, like that main orc and stuff. It just seemed like, you know, you had a good thing going with the orcs in Lord of the Rings. Why not kind of stick with that? But what did you think, Dave?
I could see that. I thought that like the cave trolls and then like the goblin king there. I think that's certainly I'm on the record. I always prefer practical to. You know, for sure. So I think, like, the bigger stuff, like when they're running through the goblin, you know, over the bridge and stuff, I didn't mind as well. I thought that was okay. But, yeah, I think I agree. Like, the cave trolls and the big goblin king, yeah, I mean, I don't know how you do that practically, but...
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's probably just, you know, it shows still the limitations of...
Sure, yeah, oh yeah, sure. But I did think that I was actually impressed by... The pale orc. I did think that was like a lot of the motion capture, and I thought that was pretty. There's some really cool stuff in there. So
I guess I'm sensitive to that stuff for whatever reason because I'm a sensitive.
Well, I mean, well, you had that run in with a pale orc in high school. I mean, look, let's not beat around the bush. I mean, it was a tough time for you.
Well, first of all, his name is Biff, and he played football.
Well, yeah, okay, all right.
A little more trolling than orc.
Yeah,
we're talking about that semester I spent in Middle Earth. Yes, that's true.
That's true. Yeah, yeah, Houghton in Middle Earth. That was good stuff. So, well, all right. Well, yeah, I probably did overhype it, so, but it still remains one of my.
Again, I like
it, and it probably is because maybe I went in the opposite. You know, I wasn't expecting too much, and it kind of blew me away. So,
and that happened to me several times last year. That there was something that I wouldn't have been expecting too much from.
Yeah.
Had I not gone in hearing really positive things about it from other people and then walked away maybe a little disappointed. Not really. I mean, I did like the movie a lot, especially if coming off of the extended edition marathon went through a few weeks ago.
And so, you have to say, isn't it kind of cool? Like, it does, you know, it does feel like it fits in that universe. Like, it does feel like it fits nicely as a prequel. You know?
There were a lot of, you know, nods and ties and hooks to the originals, which I mostly met with warm smiles and like, oh yeah, that's fun. I remember that.
Warm smiles.
My old news, and this is something that has lived up to the hype so far. I finally started watching The Wire.
Yes. Another very hyped from this.
That's right. So I watched season one. I just started season two. It is awfully good. It's very good. All the procedural stuff is very, well put together. Everything fits together nicely. The you know, performances are great. It definitely has a, you know, huge ensemble. I don't know, not feeling it is. It's a huge ensemble sprawling story that they, you know, with a lot of like really minute details that are important, and they do a great job of kind of giving you the information when you need it, without making it feel like people are just sitting around. Give me exposition all the time.
Yeah,
it's great the way the parallels between like the rules and the codes and the unspoken, you know, favors and games that are played both on the cop side and on the criminal side. And stuff. But yeah, I had a lot of fun. I was not necessarily expecting it to switch up as much for the second season as it appears to be.
Oh yeah, right.
There are a lot of people who left the show in the second season because of that.
I think the second season is universally regarded as the weakest season. I really do. I think that even though, you know, I still think it's great, but it's definitely in comparison, it's certainly weaker. And then 3, 4, and 5 are pretty awesome. So, but it does keep expanding. The world that they build continues to expand into different levels of, kind of the urban society they're looking at.
I mean, that happens on almost any show where you go in and watch one season that you like so much, and then the second season, you know, mostly by necessity, they want to start and kind of introduce new characters and kind of take it in new directions, bring in all that kind of stuff, and it's going to be jarring when you go right into that.
Yeah.
Maybe in my head I was expecting this to be a bit more like something like Breaking Bad, to compare it to another show that I really like, where it is just is one story from beginning to end. Like, the one season ends, the next season picks up right where it left off, and it goes. And this feels like it's more in line with not quite a show like Justified or Sons of Anarchy, but that kind of thing where it's all the same characters, but they take the story in some different directions.
They do, but it is pretty cohesive as it gets rolling. I think the second season takes a little while to get going, but it's like it does feel like when all is said and done, it'll feel like one giant saga.
And I'm enjoying it. So thank you again.
All right. Very good. Good to hear. Okay. See, for me, while you brought it up, I just, like, literally tonight wrapped up season 4 of Sons of Anarchy. I don't know why I put it off for so long. In fact, Eric had mailed me the Blu-ray, and I sent it back because I didn't get around to watching it. So I finally followed up with it on Amazon Prime and just kind of rocketed it through. And very good season. Excellent season. And it's just amazing how they stick the landing so great. Even if it's one parting shot, it's just always a great way to wrap up a season. A lot of stuff went down, got a little busy at some points. Pretty crazy, super, you know, a lot of twists here and there. So there were some times that seemed a little contrived, but I can't really fault it because it was relentlessly entertaining. Went to a lot of places I was looking forward to. For instance, I first watched the show, kind of filling on the promise of Jax and, you know, what he was capable of. So, really great installment to a series that I, one of a few series that I'm enjoying watching regularly now. So,
season 3 sort of stepped away from that.
Yeah.
Yes. Kind of conflict at the top of the, you know, the club. So it was nice to get back to that stuff.
It was. and then I just actually, before I hit record here, just finished watching episode 1 of Justified. So that is it's off to a rollicking start, and I'll leave it at that.
Fourth season, right?
Season 4, right.
Yeah.
I would say that this episode, I was laughing more at this episode than anything. I mean, it really ratcheted up the dark humor, but it is dark, and it really ends on a dark note, so I will leave it at that.
I think we may have to buy the season through Amazon.
That's what I'm doing. Yep.
We did that with season 3, and it worked out well.
Yeah. And it's just hard. I can't. I mean, it's not. It's pretty much the only show I think I'm watching now. So I feel like $2 an episode, that's fine. I think I could. $2 is like, will get me 8 miles in gas mileage. So I figure it's okay to spend and support this show.
The thing is, we're also, invested in Downton Abbey. Because I don't go to the Broadway, I watch Downton Abbey instead.
Do what you get.
I hope we can do, do two TV shows.
It's a lot.
I guess we can. We're not
to ask.
We are made of money. So.
And you got Community coming up in like two and a half weeks or something like that.
And Arrested Development in May, right?
In May, yeah. That was just announced.
Yep. Last thing, a movie I saw, not Justified, Jack Reacher. Pretty good. Yeah. Tom Cruise, even though he's a foot shorter than the actual character in the books, of which the books I'm a fan of, he pulls off the character well, and it is a solid movie, and I can understand why it was delayed opening, by the way. It's got a very disturbing opening, but beyond that, cool procedural, nailed the character, very highly recommended. Good kind of old-fashioned, thriller type of thing. So, and that is that. So, moving on, stuff we've got coming up for the site. Mac?
Yep, I'm just, tonight I'm finishing up my review of season 2 of Shameless, the Showtime series.
Right.
And that's interesting. It's not quite what I was expecting. It's basically just about this family that has like zero moral center and very little money to their name. So basically the dad is William H. Macy. He takes all the family's money and spends it on booze, leaving all his kids to sort of fend for themselves and pay the bills through whatever illegal schemes and wheeling and dealing they can come up with. So, but, you know, even with that description, it's not quite as, it's like not shock value. It's not quite as sleazy and trashy as you might think. It's just that, you know, these these characters, they have no moral center. They do really reprehensible things. But it's played so matter-of-factly that this is, it's just like, well, this is the world that they live in. And there's not really any sort of good or bad ascribed to their actions. It's just that this is just who they are.
Is it any fun?
Is it funny?
There's a lot of humor in it. William H. Macy plays the dad, and every once in a while he goes off on these rants about how nothing is ever his fault and it's all everyone else's fault, and the character is just like so full of it that it's just really funny.
Alright.
So, yeah, there's a lot of the humor to it too. Kind of dark humor as well, like we talked about Justified, but overall it's a good show. There's not really arcs, it's more of a soap opera type of storytelling where things just kind of escalate and escalate but never really get anywhere. So that was a little frustrating, but overall I'd have to say I liked it.
All right. Daryl?
Not a ton to report. I was one of the unfortunate few to have their packages delayed imminently, so had a big backlog of stuff that, you know, wasn't really thrilled about watching. I have reviewed the latest movie from the director of Record, which I've said plenty of times is one of my favorite modern horror movies, Balaguero. The movie's called Sleep Tight, and it's his first real foray outside of horror. He's done a few ghost movies and the first two Record movies, and he's mostly very strong. Sleep Tight represents his best work to date, as a total film. It's a thriller about a Barcelona apartment building doorman, who takes it upon himself to make people miserable, to make himself happy. And with keys to the apartments, he goes and, makes their lives miserable. It's specifically this one extremely bubbly, extremely nice person, who's always super friendly to him. And the more he does to her, some really awful things, and she never knows that he's doing these things to her. It's all for his own benefit. She comes out, she's got a rash that he's caused. She's smiling, everything's fine, and it just kills him. And the actor's name is Louis Tozar, who I don't know from anything else. But he plays it, this cold, frustrated, exploding person just perfectly. It's really a brilliant performance and an excellent movie. Sleep Tight. I definitely recommend it.
All right. Eric.
Quick shout out to what I reviewed last week, because we didn't have a show last week. I reviewed Beasts of the Southern Wild, which is, I assume, going to get some nominations when award season rolls around. I had heard a lot about it before I saw it. Didn't know too much because I wanted to go in fresh, and it wasn't really what I expected. I think I expected maybe a bit more of a fantasy than the film is, like an obvious fantasy. There are some pretty heavy fantasy elements. The story takes place kind of just off the Louisiana coast on this vulnerable island. This place called the Bathtub, which is just kind of a ramshackle community of shacks and people who live in hard ways, and a hurricane comes through. It's not specifically called Katrina, but it probably is supposed to be that, and kind of the what happens in the aftermath. But it stars a 6-year-old actress. Her name is how do you pronounce it? Kevenjane Wallace. And first timer, and she is outstanding. And she plays this girl named Hush Puppy, and her dad is a guy named Wink, another first timer. And it's just kind of their relationship is the heart of the movie. And it really, when you first start watching it, you hate the guy because he just seems like he is just a cruel, distant man. But as you watch it, you just kind of see kind of the way that he is trying to help his daughter to survive and to learn to survive and to kind of learn all the lessons she needs to kind of be where they are. I really liked it a lot. I think I watched it a couple times. The second viewing, I got even more out of it. So I know it's gotten mostly positive, but some mixed reactions. But I would definitely encourage people to check it out. So, and on the opposite of that, this week I'm reviewing something called Captain Cornelius Cartoons Cartoon Lagoon.
Ah, sounds great.
Volume one. it's a pretty fresh idea. It's kind of like a puppet show. Kind of a semi-animated puppet show, and what happens is these puppets go into this theater and they watch these old cartoons, and they sit there. You can see their silhouettes, and they make fun of the cartoons while they're watching them, and it's really, I mean, I've never seen anything quite like it before. But no, I of course being sarcastic, it is basically Mystery Science Theater ripoff. I mean, it's pretty amazing they got away with this. It wasn't a TV show. I think it was released digitally at some point. Now it's the first time on DVD. I don't want to come down too hard on it because it is actually pretty funny. And the look is their own. It's somewhere between kind of like an Adult Swim cartoon. Like that, there's physical puppets that exist in the world and they have animated faces on top of them. And there's guys and they're in a submarine and they are collecting cartoons from the water or something.
okay.
All righty.
I don't know. They watch like an old Casper cartoon, an old Popeye cartoon, and they, you know, make jokes about it. And there are some funny jokes. I think they do what they do well. It's just amazing how close they are to Mystery Science Theater without giving any indication that they know that they're ripping off this other show. Down, you know, not only like the silhouettes on the screen, but down to like, when they leave the theater, there's like a hatch that closes and the wheels spin shut. Wow. I mean, it's pretty amazing. So still wrapping my head around it. I'll, you know, stay tuned for my review to find out where I land on this shameless plagiarism.
Let's see. Speaking of weird cable comedies that aren't that funny, House of Lies, season one for Showtime, the show that stole John Ralphio away from us. It is not funny. It's kind of annoying. So really kind of slick. And so Don Cheadle's in this, and they're like management consultants, and so they're running through corporate America, blah, blah, blah. And then like he pauses time, and he informs the audience about stuff. This is really annoying. I mean, Zach Morris did it better, let's all be honest. So, so that was kind of disappointing. I mean, I have nothing else to say. House of Lies is, you know, it's got Kristen Bell is in it. She's kind of boring. I don't know, nothing going on. What was a surprise was a recent Nazi zombie movie that I reviewed.
Ooh.
There, which was actually not terrible. And has a pretty good tagline. What killed them made them stronger. Not bad. you're seeing more and more Nazi zombie movies show up. And this one.
What's it called?
War of the Dead.
War of the Dead, okay.
War of the Dead. Yeah, I just reviewed one called Outpost Black Sun, which is pretty boring and impossible to watch because it was dark all the time. This one's better put together and a little more entertaining and, you know, halfway decent. So,
yeah, because, I mean, Nazi zombies is a bad movie staple.
It is.
Since the early, at least the early 70s.
Yeah, it's becoming more and more, I've noticed, though. You know, I figured that my theory is with vampires off the table as the most overused villain, that the zombie Nazis have kind of filled in the vacuum. So, yeah. But, was surprisingly non-terrible. So
seems like zombie Nazis are like the thing that you'd feel least guilty about killing.
Yeah, that's pretty much
anything in the world.
It's like the worst thing. Yeah, it's like, yeah, right, absolutely. Them and the next frontier is zombie Nazi slave traders that Liam Neeson took out and taken. You know, there you go. White slavers.
Actually, if they're supplanting vampires in terms of popularity, though, it's only a matter of time before someone writes a Nazi zombie, you know, teenage romance.
That's true. Yes.
I'm looking zombies.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to Anne Frank zombie Nazi hunter. Is that tasteless or is that brilliant?
Yeah, okay, quite. Yeah, because she's hunting them. So.
Yeah, it's okay. It's empowering. All right.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So that's not too terrible. So there. That's all I got. Oh, I don't know, since we didn't go last week. Probably the worst movie I've seen in a long time, something called Fred 3. Did I bring up Fred 3 at all?
No. Oh, it's the guy from YouTube?
Yeah, it's so terrible. Oh, unbelievable. They made three of these movies. Basically, it's a stupid kid who talks in a high-pitched helium voice, and I got him a million subscribers on YouTube. So yeah.
It's terrible.
Just chew on that for a little while. So, all right, my voice is diminishing. Mac, take us next.
Sure thing. We're going to take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray, and you at home can play along. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com, click on the link or the tab at the top for DVD releases. There, scroll down and hit the link for the cover art gallery for January 15th. We're just going to talk about whatever we see on the list here. Well, did anybody actually get around to seeing Taken 2?
No.
I can't believe if you've asked me that question a year ago, I said, of course I've seen it already. What? What are you talking about, future me? How could you not go see it? But
it's just the concept, you know. In the first one, they took his daughter. And this one, they take his daughter and his wife.
That's right.
And the villain is the son of the guy he killed in the first one. It's just lazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like he's this cool former secret agent. He could have all kinds of adventures. Why just repeat the same thing you did in the first one? I don't know.
Well, and speaking of that, repeating the same stuff you've done before, there's Life's Too Short, a crushingly disappointing Ricky Gervais show starring Warwick Davis. Very, very disappointing.
Oh, that's right. I remember when that came out.
Very disappointing. And so that review of mine is posted already, I believe.
It's not a great week.
A show I really like. It's not a perfect show, but it's a lot of fun. Is Merlin?
Yeah, I find that.
I think that's the fourth season. Yes, and it has its cheesy moments to be sure, but it's a fun kind of cheesy. So I really dig it.
Let's see.
That is a big ass set for The Notebook.
Oh, God, that must be awful.
So you get yourself like a Mead five-subject notebook.
Yeah, what kind of collectibles does the notebook
I bet it comes with the book, which, great.
that's box of tissues, maybe.
Maybe a box of tissues.
Unrealistic expectations. Yes, something like that.
Let's see. I'm reviewing this movie, Love Me, this week, and the reason I'm reviewing it, which speaks poorly on me, is that I noticed that the director of it was the director of Hellraisers 5 and 6.
Nice.
So that's me for you.
It doesn't look like a love story.
No, it doesn't. It looks like a Rick Botta type movie, low budget thriller style suspense stuff, which I'm fine with. But yeah, it was Hellraiser 5 and 6 that really sold me on it.
Of course.
He's got The Man Who Knew Too Much, which is an excellent movie, on Criterion.
Cool.
There's Les Mans, which I think was released so people would mistakenly buy it because I think it's Les Mis. That's what I'm thinking.
It's like the Asylum version of
Les Mis. Yes, the Asylum version of Les Mis. Yes.
So people who not only confuse Le Mans with Les Mis, but who think Les Miserables is actually about, just called Les Mis.
No, yeah, right.
Like, it's just shortened. It's like, that's
the thing. I think it's about car racing, right?
Right.
I mean, I think those people might also be in danger of buying Lil Wayne if they're that stupid. See, we got a bunch of old Woody Allen Blu-rays on here, which is pretty cool. Sleeper and Hannah and Her Sisters.
Oh, man, this looks terrible. 30 Nights of Paranormal Activity with the Devil Inside. Blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, that looks terrible.
Those spoof movies.
Oh, French Stewart, how far you've fallen.
Oh, is French Stewart in that?
Yes. Well,
that is something. Let's see. You've got a really misleading version of Caligula.
About a shark?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember that scene.
Yeah, I don't remember. I mean, maybe when he walked his horse across the river, maybe a shark attack. I don't know. I know The Tin Drum on Criterion. That's an old favorite of mine.
Well.
Yeah.
Yeah, nothing. So, you know what's next? End of releases on Indie Release of the Week. Eric.
House of Bones.
Yeah.
Very good.
Fair enough.
Mac.
3D Mystic Mountains.
That's good.
Very good. Very good. Very good.
Daryl.
All right. I had a backup. All right, we're just going to go with Hannah and Her Sisters.
Of course.
That works.
I'm going with Muddy Matters. Now, Eric, another question here. Did you notice a little something called Stone Soup?
I did notice that.
All right.
Yeah, I also noticed, and I think we've probably seen this before, Monsters High is apparently an animated series now.
We wait for the elusive Monster High, which I think we've talked about on this podcast.
Yeah, Monster High, yeah.
Gentlemen, the a really terrible monster comedy movie. What? I don't know what it was. It was terrible.
It's based on a series of children's books, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, this was before all that. This was just like an 80s
yeah.
sort of horror, not quite sex comedy. I mean, they had their moments, but it was mostly just terrible 80s.
Oh, I think I remember that movie. It was like, it was marketed as a horror movie, but it's just kind of like this kids hanging out in high school.
No.
Sure.
I was really bad. Let's not talk of this anymore.
I think Dracula plays basketball, but I'm not really sure.
Oh, man.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Let's speak no more of this. Jay, let's go to our Amos topics. Final phase here. I'll go first before I totally lose my voice. Serial. All
right. I'm gonna jump in with beginning of Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Damn. Oh, of course.
Sorry. He makes his giant breakfast. Rube Goldberg in breakfast that ends with the pancakes on which he pours Mr. T cereal and then takes about a bite and then wipes his mouth and walks out the door.
Yeah, I recall Mr. T cereal being pretty decent. Am I right in that? Was it pretty
just
good?
Some corn cereal in T-shapes, right?
I guess so. I remember it being okay. I don't know why. Maybe not. Maybe that's just my admiration. It's my admiration of the man shining through, I suppose.
Sure. I mean, all the work he did with, young teenage gymnasts.
That's true. That's true.
I'm not sure if this counts or not, but I'll go for it. There's a bit in the first Addams Family movie where Thing is trying to get Gomez's attention, and he tries the sign language, but it doesn't work, so he reaches over to the cereal bowl and grabs a spoon out of it and does Morse code.
All right. That works. And it
he like spills the cereal all over the place. It was like product placement. So yeah, that
now, Addams Family, underrated movie, don't you think?
It's hilarious.
It was pretty good.
Pretty good, pretty funny.
I like the second one too.
That's not bad either.
As much, if not a little bit more.
The second one's probably better, but the first one is really funny.
Yeah, I like both of them. I also like the Brady Bunch movies for some reason.
Yeah,
I'm not...
they're good.
You're on thin ice.
Am I thinking the Brady Bunch movies?
No, those were funny.
I thought they were pretty good. Thought they weren't too bad. Thought if you're gonna make a Brady Bunch movie, that's the way you need to make one.
Yeah, I guess I can see that.
There you go.
So it's me, huh?
Singing in the movie for you, Mac.
All right, well, I'm taking the easy way out. I'm going with The Road to Wellville.
Right. Matthew Broderick, right?
Yeah. It's about John Harvey Kellogg, the founder of Kellogg's, who based his whole operation on the idea of cereal being the super health food of the early 20th century, late 19th century.
I didn't know that.
It was all like all of that stuff is, it's Road to Wellville was based on a true story. It's all about his clinic. And basically his clinic is he feeds you full of cereal.
Huh.
So it's Anthony Hopkins, it's Matthew Broderick, Bridget Fonda, John Cusack, Dana Carvey. And they all eat a bunch of cereal, and live clean. I don't really care for the movie all that much, but put into a corner after the Pee Wee's Big Adventure thing.
Yeah.
I think I could only really come up with The Road to Wellville.
Well, that's good, actually, because I had one, and if you had taken it, I was screwed. And it was, of course, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. The thrilling Cheerio sequence. That's it. That's the last we see of Rick Moranis, I guess. Yeah. He must be out there somewhere doing something. All right, Mac, what do you got?
Okay, this one is about opening narrations. Film, TV shows begin with a big dramatic opening narration where the narrator tells you about what's going on. Some are good, some are maybe not necessary. So, good or bad, opening narrations.
Well, in honor of May, the narrator in Arrested Development. Ongoing. Nice. I mean, his open narrations are great, but his ongoing narrative. I like his epilogues are great too. But
yeah.
He really becomes a character.
He really does. Like literally in the very last scene too. The show, but yes. Yeah. Especially likes it when he takes umbrage when anybody disparages Andy Griffith. Or Donnie Most. Graft versus Host. No, it's not Steffi Graf. It's Happy Day Star Donnie Host.
It's Most. It's Most.
That was so great.
We have been watching, by the way, we have been watching, it's another one of, like, it's Arrested Development season around here. We're just watching them again now, just to watch them.
Yeah, I'll probably start watching them in a couple of months to get myself set.
Yeah, we watched the Thomas Jane one. I just want my kids back. Oh, fantastic.
Homeless dad.
Homeless dad.
And I love, because at the time, I didn't actually even know that Tom Jane was a person. I thought it was just a character. And then I wound up watching the first episode of Hung, and I'm like, what the hell, Tom Jane? He just wants his kids back. He must have gotten them, or he wouldn't have gotten this role.
Now, Mac, did you say only opening narration?
That's what I had in mind, yeah. If you want to stretch the...
Can I give you a closing narration?
Oh, sure, why not?
Nice. All right. I'm actually going to stretch even further because it's not technically a narration. But at the end of The Amazing Spider-Man, it ends with a really long and unusually long voicemail message that Peter Parker finds on his phone. You saw the movie recently, didn't you, Mac? Am I right about that? Okay. That seems to lay out maybe a bit more than you would get from a normal cell phone message. I don't want to spoil it, but it's, yeah. It's not great.
Just because it's too long or?
It's a bit kind of in your face. It seems like they could have found a different way for Peter to have heard that speech than as a cell phone message that he happened not to have checked until the very end of the movie. A movie which I generally actually kind of liked, despite its bad reputation. But
I'm going to go with Sam Elliott's narration of The Big Lebowski.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
You know, sometimes you eat the bar, sometimes the bar eats you.
I've not seen that movie since the first time I've seen it years and years
ago. Oh, man, you got to see it again.
Oh, yeah, you really should see it again. It's really fantastic.
All right, Mac.
All right, well, for me, I... talk about bending the rules. I went to the world of comic books, as I so often do. What I've got here is Web of Spider-Man number 25, published in 1987. And you might have heard some other folks on other, you know, making fun of this around the internet, but it's too good not to. This is the opening narration on the first page of the comic. It says, "The lust for power, like acne, the cockroach, and other fun things, has been with us forever. But does it grow only in our earthly soil, or can it flourish in distant corners of this cosmic garden? Behold the planet Signorion, and wonder no more."
Not bad.
That right there is an opening
narration. That's
not too
shabby.
That's rough. That's rough.
Could you imagine if Galadriel brought up acne in the Fellowship of the Ring? And Sauron's darkness spreads. Like a rock back acne.
And the cockroach, another fun thing. This whole issue is gold. It's all about the aliens lose their cosmultigizer, which the narration tells us is short for cosmic multi-energizer.
That's good.
And the stalker from the stars comes down to Earth to try to find it and has to fight Spider-Man.
Is the person who made that comic a contest winner of some sort?
I don't know.
I think maybe it's Pig.
Race your own Marvel comic.
Maybe it's Pig Boy. No, I think I shafted off to Mattel from that. We went for another contest.
Oh, Pig Boy.
So actually my guess for, everyone's trying to guess who the person at the end of the credits in Amazing Spider-Man was. I'm going to guess it was this guy. It was Stalker from the Stars, from the planet Signorion.
Stalker from the Stars sounds like a terrible reality show.
All right, Eric, what do you got?
Okay, we're going with Clocks.
Uh-oh. You're not going to bring up the clock, are you, Mac?
Oh, dude. No. That's a good one.
I dare you to not bring up the clock.
The clock.
Isn't there a clock man in that nightmarish Return to Oz? Right? Isn't there a guy with clocks? I don't know.
Oh, there's that kind of clunky robot guy, right?
Have clocks all about him.
Yeah, what's his deal?
I don't know, maybe not.
Isn't Clockman a character from the third Dark Tower book, or am I thinking of something else?
Oh.
There may also have been a Clockman in Oz. I don't remember. I don't remember it being in Return to Oz. I remember there being
maybe not. I'm thinking the robot guy with a mustache. I go, oh, never mind. Must be something sure. I'm thinking of. Okay, I'll continue. I'm resisting the will to bring up Flavor Flav, so I'll just go and say the Town Hall clock in Back to the Future.
Of right? course.
Character yeah. in yeah. itself.
Classic. You know, it's funny. The ones that all come to my mind are just sort of throwbacks to the classic Buster Keaton stunt. So Modern Times, I believe, was the movie, right? So I'll just go with that one because that was kind of the forerunner for the Back to the Future one, and like Jackie Chan and all those others. You know, way up high on top of the building on the giant clock, Buster Keaton's barely hanging on.
Does you mean Harold Lloyd?
Was that Harold Lloyd? I thought it was Buster
yeah.
Keaton. Oh,
Richard
man.
Lloyd, yeah.
I suck.
There's actually the beginning of Back to the Future when they pan through all the clocks. There's one that it shows like a miniature Harold
That's
Lloyd
right.
on a clock.
Yeah. So, anyway, I'll go with that one for some of the silent movie action. Are you sure that wasn't Buster Keaton?
Pretty sure. I'm not going to Google it, though.
Nice. Someone's Googling it.
So, in an effort to not go into totally obscure cult horror stuff,
yeah.
I'm going to, of which there's plenty of clocks, but would take way too much explaining to make worth anything. I'm going to go with the awesome finale of The Stranger, the Orson Welles starring movie as a Nazi war criminal, where he's hiding up on I think it's Munich, he's hiding up in plain sight within a clock. And it's an awesome finale.
Nice.
So I could talk about Jean Roland's French lesbian vampire movies all day with people coming out of clocks, but we're just going to leave
we'll
that
aside.
We'll
table that one. Yeah. We'll save that for the French lesbian ambush topic next.
There you go.
Oh, that's what I meant by clocks. You guys didn't I thought you were familiar with the slang.
Well, then
Western New York vernacular we don't familiar with.
I know, yeah.
All right, I guess it's back to you, Eric.
All right, well, I'm going to go with the clock in Groundhog Day that wakes Bill Murray up every single day.
That's your geek knowledge. What time?
Well, 6 o'clock.
All right, there you go.
Actually, we just watched the first half of it before we started this podcast. So.
Good. All right.
I hope I would have known that anyway, playing I Got You, Babe, Buster in the Chair. I mean, again, I just watched it, but I would have known that, too. That's a great movie.
It is a great movie. Yes, it is.
Except for Andie MacDowell.
Oh, I love
her. Can't believe her in just about anything she's ever been in.
Wow.
You have a list somewhere, don't you?
She does a list.
Yeah, it grows. It's not really a list. It's a pad these days.
It's a notebook.
You should get that notebook set. I bet that comes with a notebook. You could put all right. of it.
your knock list.
It's top of the list. It's going to be the notebook.
Exactly.
All right, Daryl, take us away.
All right. Non-actors in starring roles.
Okay, well, since I disallowed Mac to use clock, I will not use Jim Cotta here. or Curtis Bush. Let's see. Non-actors and starring roles.
That's a tricky one.
All right. Well, I've never actually seen this movie, but the trailer for it was included in Trailer War, which I reviewed recently, which is a little 2 hours old, you know, exploitation and sci-fi and B-movie trailers. There was one movie called Force 5. Which is apparently a movie where there's a team of martial artists who are actually played by real martial arts experts,
yes.
except for the woman who was there just because she looks pretty. And they show, you know, they show like the shots of the trailers of all these guys, you know, doing this pretty, elaborate and, you know, competent martial arts moves. And they show her kind of like half-assedly kicking someone. And that's kind of, but, you know, she's pretty. So.
All right, we'll go with Ducata, but I'll go with Curtis Bush from Psycho Kickboxer. Yeah, okay. We'll go with him.
What's his background?
He is a world champion kickboxing champ. Hmm. Dan Mancini and I had the privilege of interviewing him for a Special Objection episode, which was a treat. He regaled us of his other acting exploits, including a brief cameo in the movie Battleship, which may or may not have gotten cut. And he had actually, he told us a story how he read for a beefier part, and the people there laughed, were laughing, and it wasn't, it wasn't a comedy part. So they felt so bad for him, they stuck him in as a cameo in Battleship, which might be the only reason I ever revisit Battleship. So there's your Curtis Bush trivia of the day.
Boy, I'm having a tough time with this one.
It doesn't have to be like headlining role, right?
Yeah, no. Like, if Alejandro Jodorowsky's Dune had ever come to pass, Salvador Dali was going to play the universe's emperor. But the emperor doesn't have a hell of a lot going on in this in the thing. But Salvador Dali is the thing, right?
Yeah.
All right, that opens things up a little bit.
Doesn't count because that never came to pass.
Okay, I got a couple honorable mentions to throw away when we're done, so things are starting to click now.
Oh, man. I guess Lassie doesn't count, huh?
Mm. Well, while you think of it, here's a couple that occurred to me.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, David Bowie as Pontius Pilate.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, in Last Temptation of Christ, right?
Yeah. Oh, God, I hate that movie so much. For things like that, it's not that I don't like David Bowie. It's not that I don't like Willem Dafoe.
It's not that I don't like
Harvey Keitel, but, you know,
Let's give Judas a Brooklyn accent.
Hey, Jesus, let's go get some cannoli. What do you say?
that's realistic.
Come on, guys.
Now, I just want to run this by you just for my taste meter. Is Leave the Cross, Take the Cannolis tasteless or funny? Is that bad? I shouldn't say that, right?
I'll take funny.
All right.
Survey. I also throw in Wilt Chamberlain from Conan the Destroyer.
Yeah, Wilt Chamberlain and Conan the Destroyer is perfect.
I'm trying to think, did he have any speaking lines at all?
I don't think so.
Really?
I mean, it's a lot like Conan, like Arnold Schwarzenegger in Conan the Barbarian.
Oh, that's true.
Technically, that's right, right?
A few grunts and some screams and, you know, yeah, you got a part.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in Airplane. Yeah, anything, Mac? I'm doing my best here.
Oh, man. Well, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, wasn't he also in Enter the Dragon?
Oh, yeah, it's a good one. That works.
Busting up some kung fu moves?
Yeah. Yes, he was.
There you go. Saved by the Skyhook.
Yeah. All right, then. I'm going with one of my favorite awful movies of all time. It's called The Fastest Guitar Alive. It stars Roy Orbison, and he is the starring role. As a wig-donning, bearded, mustachioed guitar player who steals Union Gold to fund the Southern War. It's just plainly the worst. And Roy Orbison never should have acted. I mean, I've seen movies where, like, Marty Robbins, old country star Marty Robbins, is playing himself in a movie. With no connection to a plot, and I take just that part over all of the fastest guitar alive. It is just one of the most awful things ever to see Roy Orbison trying to act.
That's a bummer.
But I love it, and I love Roy Orbison, so, you know, Fastest Guitar Alive, 1967.
Well, I think ending on a Roy Orbison note we can't do worse than that, so. We can't do better than that, I meant. Better than that.
Sure, we can do worse.
I guess we can do a lot worse. So that is it for this 2013 edition of Friday Filibuster. And here's to many more to come. So, Mac McIntyre, take us away.
Leave the cross, take the cannoli.